Welcome back to Walking Alongside, a podcast about addiction, recovery, and friendship. I'm your host, Logan Palooch, and I'm back with Chris Trimble, the producer of this podcast. And this is episode 3, our final episode. Just a friendly reminder, it's important to listen to these episodes in order. Please be sure to start with episode 1.
Shall we start with a recap of episode 2?
Yes, the theme of episode 2 was friendship.
But not, as I recall, in the form of guidance, correct?
That's right. Addiction is a complicated disease, so we leave guidance and treatment to professionals.
So it sounds like supporting someone is mostly about listening.
Yep. It's about turning towards someone while the rest of the world turns away. It's about walking alongside. It's about meeting them where they are.
It's about offering respect, humility, and empathy.
Yes, especially in a world where few others do.
That's it?
Well, that's not everything, but that's definitely the biggest part of it.
All right, so what does that leave for episode 3?
We're going to talk through 4 specific scenarios.
Sounds highly worthwhile. What are they?
Scenario number 1. What do you do if the person you are supporting chooses to postpone their recovery effort? The second scenario, what do you do if there is a crisis? To be specific, what if the person you are supporting calls you on the phone and tells you that they are about to take a substance? Scenario number 3, what do you do if the person you are supporting asks you to do something that makes you uncomfortable, like helping them get drugs? And the 4th scenario, what do you do if the person you are supporting gets angry? And I mean angry, as in they really lash out at you.
Okay, wow, that's a lot. I think we better take these one at a time.
Yep, that's what we're going to do. And we're going to be hearing more from both Carol Sarazen and Emily Duff. Okay, scenario number 1. What do you do if the person you're supporting chooses to postpone their recovery effort?
Well, Logan, my instinct, of course, is to try to get them to change their mind.
And that's natural, Chris.
But I'm guessing not so desirable.
Correct. This is a situation in which it's just incredibly tempting to try to persuade the person you are supporting to go in a different direction.
But I don't do that? I stick to listening?
Yes, even when it's hard, especially when it's hard. Here's Carol.
So I think the biggest thing I would say is don't try to tell people what they need to be doing or should be doing. You know, you need to go to rehab or you need to do this, you need to do that. No, it's not about you. It's about them. They're human beings. They have their own say and, their own say of their lives. And whether that's recovery or not, that's not up to you to decide. It's up to them.
It's important to understand that making a commitment to recovery is not easy.
Yeah, some people may just be like in like the pre-contemplation stage, like, okay, I would like to maybe learn a little bit more about what recovery entails. Some people are just really scared because they don't know anything but their addiction, right? They've started so young. I know people who have started using heroin at the age of 12 and now they're in their 30s. And they're like, I don't know who I am without heroin. Like, what's going to happen now? Like, I'm going to lose my friends. I'm going to lose this, drug that has been there for me every single time I needed it when my family maybe wasn't, or my friends weren't, or my coworkers weren't. This drug's always been there for me. So now if I give this up, who am I? Who's going to be there for me now?
Wow, I can feel the fear. I'm imagining that if you're a person with addiction, then most of your friends are also using drugs. And if you enter recovery, you may be leaving those friends behind.
That's an important part of it. Choosing to go into recovery is a big step, a huge step. And until someone is truly ready to take that step, they're just not ready.
It might be really hard for some of our listeners to hear, especially those who have a longstanding and complicated relationship with the person they're supporting. Those listeners might desperately want to see recovery, and soon.
That is true. And look, our listeners should understand, supporting a person with addiction can be very difficult. Sometimes it can be a bit scary, or maybe psychologically draining. So, when someone you really care about chooses to postpone their recovery, it can feel agonizing. But the reality is that recovering from addiction often takes more than one try. And even though you might desperately want to see recovery, the desire to recover must come from within. You really can't push someone into it.
So instead, I just walk alongside.
Yes, exactly. Okay, scenario two. What do you do if the person you are supporting calls you on the phone and tells you that they are about to use?
This feels like a test. I so badly want to give guidance. In fact, I want to scream, "Don't do that."
Sure, but what could you do instead?
I could ask questions. I could listen.
Exactly. Ask, "What happened? What is upsetting you?" Get them talking. Listen very closely. Ask more questions. Be a calming presence.
That's it?
Well, in this case, there is something more that you can do. If at all possible, go to their physical location and sit next to them. Your physical presence may help a great deal. This is no time for the person you are supporting to be alone.
Okay. Anything more?
Yes. Remember three numbers.
Three numbers?
Yes. A three-digit phone number. The number is 211. And if you are sitting side by side, you can make the call together. Here's Emily Duff.
So it's the National Helpline for Addiction and Recovery, and they can transfer this person to the recovery treatment resources. It's also a suicide hotline that they can connect someone to if they're having like suicidal ideation to talk with people. There's a whole list of resources that can be reached for that person.
So with just one phone call to 211, we can get connected to the resources we need.
Right. 211 gets you connected to a wide variety of essential services. And that's helpful. You don't have to know exactly who to call. You just remember 211.
Got it. So in a crisis, I'm a calming presence. I ask questions and I listen. And if at all possible, I go to their location and sit right beside them. And we dial 211.
Exactly right. Okay, scenario number three. Let's say the person you're supporting asks you to help them get drugs. What do you do?
I'm leaning towards just say no here, Logan.
Most likely. And in fact, the people that do this kind of work professionally become very good at setting clear boundaries. Carol, for example, won't even help buy tobacco.
I don't support chewing tobacco. So if you would like chewing tobacco, you're going to have to go buy it for yourself. That's a boundary I'm not going to cross, because the next thing you know, it's going to be, oh, can you, you know, lend me $5 so I can go get some chew. Boundaries are something that you never cross. And I am really, really good at never, ever crossing them, ever.
So it sounds to me like Carol is guarding against the possibility of a slippery slope. If she says yes to tobacco, they might ask for money. And if she says yes to money, they might ask for heroin.
Right. But it's not always obvious that you should just say no. Carol knows of a mother, for example, who chooses to help her teenage son acquire drugs, because that way he's safer.
Wow, okay. Seems to me that the ethics here might get a little complicated.
Yes. So my advice is this. Think through these situations in advance and decide on your personal boundaries. And you can even discuss your boundaries with the person you are supporting.
Sure, okay, but what kind of boundaries do I need to consider?
You might want to consider boundaries around money, around buying substances, around how much and when you can be available, around social contact with your friends or family, or around visits to your home or office. You can set any boundary you feel you need.
All right, that seems pretty sensible. But I'm imagining it might be pretty difficult to sustain those boundaries. A person with addiction might push pretty hard.
Yes, but you can be firm. You've chosen to support your friend, and that is a gift. It's also important to take care of yourself. Boundaries are a way to do that.
Got it. Makes sense.
Okay. So on to the last scenario. This one can be a tough one. Sometimes people with addiction experience anger, and they might lash out at you.
Doesn't sound fun. I'm guessing I'm not supposed to take it personally.
Exactly right. It's not about you. Not at all. Here's Emily.
People in the mid addiction, they're going to lash out. They're going to say mean things. They're going to be hurtful. But you have to remember that's not really who the person is, and it's not really them talking. It's their addiction.
Recovering from addiction can be brutal. Just the physical aspects of withdrawal can be awful. Here's Carol.
So irritability, shaking, vomiting, lethargy, anger, abdominal pain, headaches. Shaking is a big one. Throwing up is a big one.
Definitely doesn't sound like a picnic.
And that's just physical symptoms. On top of that, there's the psychological distress. And on top of that, the constant exposure to social stigma. Oh, and on top of that, there's the fact that entering recovery often brings other big life changes.
So, anger.
Yes. And sometimes a lot of anger. And in response, you are Teflon.
I let it just slide right off of me.
Yes. Now, this can be difficult, especially if you have a long-standing relationship with the person you are supporting. You might feel a whole lot of anger as well. But expressing that anger to the person you are supporting isn't going to help either one of you. It might be a good idea for you to have a support person of your own, someone you can talk to later on. Or you could consider asking the person you are supporting to find an additional support person so that you are not carrying more of a burden than you can handle. But in the moment, the best option is to brush off the anger and go back to what you were doing before, asking questions, listening, walking by their side.
Offering respect, humility, and empathy.
Yes.
It always seems to come back to that.
It does, regardless of the specific scenario.
Okay.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground, but there is one last topic to cover. It's brief, but important.
I'm ready.
Carol and Emily both do workshops with people in recovery, and there's one specific exercise that both Carol and Emily like to talk about. It's an exercise that helps people identify their strengths. Here's Emily.
So when you're asking people about their strengths, they're like, this is weird. You know, I'm funny or caring or I'm a good mom or, just sort of like these small little strengths. But then as we're working together, it's like, look at you. You're reliable, dependable. Like people want to see you. You show up to your meetings and like you really can bring out those bigger strengths that they weren't aware of.
Yeah, it sounds like this exercise is meant to deliver some positive reinforcement around strengths of character.
Yes, or maybe even more than that. Recovery can involve building a whole new identity, maybe even from the ground up.
From the ground up? What do you mean?
A person going through recovery may have completely lost sight of who they are or who they can become.
Wow. Okay, so if I'm supporting someone, do I have a role here?
You certainly can have a role, just by helping to identify and reinforce positive traits. Here's how Emily puts it.
Show them support, show them love, just keep reminding them every day that they're worth it, that, you know, that they can come out of it. Maybe if you have memories, if it's a close friend or family members, you know, making them laugh, making them feel good, really validating who they are and just really showing them the care.
So if I've known this person a long time, I can help them recall the best aspects of themselves, perhaps from before addiction.
Right. Just help them see and build on the positive.
Makes sense.
Yep, it's not hard to do, and you can't possibly do too much of it.
Okay, I like that.
Listeners, it's important that you know that not everyone succeeds in recovery, but some do. And when they do, it's a remarkable thing to see, especially if you think you've played a small role. In fact, this is why Emily and Carol are so committed to their work. Here's Carol.
She texted me the other day and she said, "Hey, Carol, I want to let you know that I'm a year sober today. I'm so excited and I really wanted to let you know because you have been an important part of my journey." And I just was like taken back because not only was I having, you know, a day, like it was so busy, it was nice to just stop and read a text message from someone who I haven't even spoken to in like 6 months, who, you know, reached out to me to say, hey, I'm a year sober today and I wanted to let you know because you've been part of that journey. So that's really, it's wonderful. It's powerful. It gives me the motivation to keep going.
And to close, let's hear Emily one more time reflect on what she's learned from working with people with addiction, especially her mother.
When you're in addiction, you're somebody completely different. And it's worth walking through those steps and going through all of those and learning about addiction to learn who the person is when they're not in active addiction. So I would just say have lots of patience, show care, kindness, and love. And the person at the end of the recovery is well worth the wait.
Powerful stuff.
Yes, it really is.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Dartmouth Trauma Interventions Research Center, hosted by Logan Palooch. Special thanks to Carol Sarazen and Emily Duff. Editing by Kay Jankowski, Aaron Barnett, Logan Palooch, Rebecca Butcher, Crystal Young, and Joni Cole. Script development, audio production, and music composition by Chris Trimble and Treehouse Audio Productions.